Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. American assistance to Ukraine continues apace, so much so it begs the following question. At what point will Russia consider the U.S. to be a co-belligerent in this conflict? The fact is, Washington is at war with Russia, and Russia is being forced to respond. Crosstalking Escalation, I'm joined by my guests, Lee Stranahan and Sue Falls. He is the host of The Backstory on Radio Sputnik. In Del Mar, we have Scott Ritter. He is a former intelligence officer and a United Nations weapons inspector. And in Sydney, we cross to Ali Risk. He is a contributor with Al Monitor. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Scott, let me go to you first in Del Mar. I see that you have a lot of books behind you. I know you write very often, and you write for a column on the RT website. So I have kind of some linguistic questions for you. In the case of the Ukraine conflict, what does the word proxy mean to you, and what does the word co-belligerent mean to you? Because it seems to me they're very elastic in this conflict. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, to me, I mean, when we speak of proxy, we're basically saying that Ukraine is doing the bidding of the United States. It's, in effect, the United States military under another guise. You know, that's a standard term of proxy. So Ukraine is an American proxy or a NATO proxy especially in terms of implementing a policy that had been outlined by Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, when he basically said that the goal of the United States is to bleed Russia dry and to make Russia weak. The army that seems to be the tool to make this happen is the Ukrainian army. So it's effectively a proxy of the United States implementing the policy of the United States. Co-belligerent, you know, if anybody thinks that Ukraine could sustain this resistance that it's undertaking right now without the assistance of the United States and NATO, think again. The United States and NATO have been pouring in money and equipment and materiel and providing political support as well that has allowed this resistance to continue. This makes the United States and NATO a co-belligerent in this conflict with Russia. They are at war with Russia. They're pretending they're not, but the fact is, through this proxy conflict, the United States and NATO is waging de facto conflict with Russia.
Okay, well, Ali, if I can go to you in Sydney, we had officials in the UK very ebullient about the fact that Ukraine is using NATO weapons to attack Russia. So isn't that kind of a free-for-all now? Why shouldn't Russia be able to hit British assets, let's say, in Poland? I mean, that's the same thing here. Go ahead.
Indeed, I think that the latest developments have shown that what's happening is a wider Western war being waged against Russia, not just a Ukrainian war. So there are multiple enemies Russia is facing, as your previous guest said. I'd have to mention here the report which was published by New York Times today, which mentioned that the Americans were providing intelligence to the Ukrainians, which led to the targeting of killing of Russian generals. So I think things have become clear as to how many enemies the Russians are now facing in Ukraine. Now, regarding your question, does that make other Western assets, targets, or perhaps Western arms shipments headed to Ukraine? Of course it does, if the situation continues to unfold. And I think this is what Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov was alluding to when he warned against the consequences of a proxy war. He actually said that there was a proxy war being waged against Russia from Ukraine. So I believe that if things continue as they are, and there doesn't seem to be any signs that the West will ease this escalation, so if this continues, I think that there is a fair chance that we could see a further expansion of the war and maybe escalation by the Russians, which could possibly expand beyond Ukrainian borders and maybe aim certain weapons shipments which are coming. Because as your guest said, a lot of people are saying that this is a heroic Ukrainian resistance that have been able to withstand. But I think that one major element which has been further underscored after the New York Times report today is that the Ukrainians are getting a lot of advanced assistance, which has enabled them to continue with putting up a fight against the Russians.
Well, Lee, it seems to me, and this is what the nightmare of NATO is, to think of the invoking Article 5, because, I mean, if NATO is sending arms, and it is sending arms into Ukraine to kill Russian soldiers, then you have a self-defense argument to be made. So, I mean, hitting an arms depot in Romania or in Poland would seem fair game, because Poland and Romania are belligerents in this conflict. They are all in on one side here. And that creates a dilemma, because does the rest of the alliance want to get involved with a proxy war that they may not necessarily want to be involved in? Hungary, for example. Go ahead, Lee.
Well, the other player here is the American people. And although this is not being registered in the American media, it's very clear to me that about half the country, mainly the Republican half, has no appetite for war. I'm not talking about politicians. The politicians clearly do. But the people, and Tucker Carlson on Fox News, the most watched nighttime host in history, Tucker Carlson clearly has no appetite for war. And I think he represents a lot of people. If they had escalated this 2 months ago, when this first started, a lot of Republicans were giving Ukraine the benefit of the doubt. But as people have realized that Zelensky is backed by George Soros and Klaus Schwab and Biden and Pelosi and a number of people who the Republicans don't like, they see it increasingly as a waste of blood and treasure.
Well, I think, Lee, it's very interesting that, you know, the Biden administration having this information, misinformation czar. I think it's no coincidence right now, because I would tend to agree with you. I wouldn't agree with the Republican Party leadership, because they're all cowards and crooks, as far as I am concerned. But but at the same time, big media, big tech is making sure voices like being heard on this program are not heard. Okay, so there certainly may be the will of the people, but if they ever hear anything contrary, it's a different topic, and that's why RT in the UK, in the United States, and Europe is being diminished in every possible way. Though we're still fighting here, Scott, let me go back to you. Because Russia's very reactive to all the things the West is doing. We endlessly, you know, talk about energy in Europe. Well, I mean, the Russians should just turn off the spigot and see how they feel about it, okay? They do, you know, don't import it. Well, then don't export it, Russia. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I think, you know, the enduring legacy of Vladimir Putin is his maturity and the insistence on Russia that it and it hopes others will adhere to the rule of law.
But Scott, does that apply during conditions of war?
Well, there is no war, and this is the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
There's a special military operation. That's a term used by Russia. Russia defined this conflict. Now, if Russia wants to change the legal foundation of this conflict, then Russia needs to declare war against Ukraine. But right now, Vladimir Putin specifically called it a special military operation, which means it's not war. It's a war-like situation, but it's not war. Therefore, all of the contractual obligations that Russia has entered into apply. The Russia simply can't shut off the spigots, because then Russia would be in violation of its legal obligation. Russia's letting other people violate the law.
All right. I mean, but Scott, I mean, let me turn to Ali in Sydney here. But I mean, the West is breaking the law all the time, seizing assets of individuals without any due process whatsoever. I mean, I appreciate extremely well Scott's point here. But I mean, you know, the way law is being interpreted here and applied is there's an asymmetry here. Go ahead, Ali.
Yes, well, we've seen unprecedented measures, escalatory measures being taken by the West. You know, the severity of the sanctions, the cutting off Russian banks from the SWIFT financial system, freezing assets, which is basically Russian property. These are all clear violations of the law. But as your previous guest said, the Russian leadership has advocated a rule-based order. This is what Putin and, by the way, the Chinese President Xi Jinping emphasized during their summit at the beginning of the Winter Olympics. So that's a world order which Russia, in addition to China, advocate. So for Russia to go against this step, I think this would contradict with the very vision or the very order which the Russian president...
Yeah, but Ali, I appreciate your point and Scott's point here, but there are countries sending military aid to Ukraine to kill Russian soldiers, okay? And commerce continues unabated. That's very difficult for me to comprehend that. Lee, let me go back to you here. You mentioned Fox News. I thought it was really interesting over the last few nights, Ukraine isn't mentioned at all. It just dropped like a lead balloon. Lee.
Well, that's because the Roe versus Wade issue overtook the news cycle so completely, among other things. But let me also say one of the things I mentioned, blood and treasure. Last I heard, you're in Moscow. You're paying about $2.15 for a gallon of gas. Is that still true?
Well, I don't drive, but it's not very expensive. But go ahead.
That's about right. In Northern California now, I talked to someone yesterday. They're paying $6 at the cheap gas stations, $6 a gallon. So that's an issue that affects Americans. And Americans see that the sanctions have backfired on the U.S. They see that Russia seems to be doing fine. That's perception here. And the sanctions have hurt the U.S. And Washington has avoided any conflict. They don't want body bags coming back because that's when people really start to lose it. And the fact that...
Okay, Lee, hold that thought, Lee. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on escalation. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing escalation. Okay, Scott, last time you were on, I don't know how many weeks ago, but you know, it seems like every few days Biden is giving more $800 million, $300 million, $33 trillion, you know, a billion. I mean, the numbers are really hard to grasp here. Is that going to change the outcome of this this conflict, Scott?
No, not at all. I mean, this conflict is, Donald Rumsfeld said infamously now, but you go to war with the army you got. And Ukraine's going to war with the army it had, and that army is being defeated piecemeal. It was a well-led, well-organized, well-equipped military force, but according to Russian Ministry of Defense statistics, which I believe are fairly accurate, they've suffered close to 50,000 casualties, and this is their frontline troops. They had 160,000 of those. So right now, Ukraine is busy mobilizing reservists. They're throwing poorly trained territorial battalions into the mix, and then you expect them to incorporate sophisticated Western military equipment at the same time. This is a suicide pill. This is a feel-good move by the West to say, hey, we're doing all we can to help the Ukrainians. But the bottom line is the Ukrainian military cannot effectively incorporate the heavy equipment that the West is providing, much of its equipment that the Ukrainians have never used before, and they don't have the means to maintain it. Even if they received it and made it to the front line, I'm here to tell you right now, in war, stuff breaks. And unless you have guys in the rear who can fix it, it stays broken, therefore it's no good to you. All the West is doing is guaranteeing that whatever Ukrainian troops fall in on this equipment, they will die in combat. And that's just a sad reality.
Well, Scott, if I can stay with you here, I think it's also a move of corporate welfare. I mean, all of the arms makers are very gleeful. I mean, talking to their shareholders, this is good for us and all that. I mean, the money can be appropriated, I suppose, spent, but I think this conflict will be way over when if things like that could do the ground. Ali, if I can go to you, I mean, I'm even more pessimistic about the arms that are going there now because given the level of corruption in Ukraine and then during the fog of war, things get even more corrupt. a lot of these weapons are going to disappear. I mean, the film Lord of War comes to mind here. Great film, okay? But, you know, Ukraine is well known as an arms exporter, illicitly, of course. And I worry that these weapons are going to fall into the hands around the world, even against the West eventually. Your thoughts. Go ahead, Ali.
Yeah, before answering your question directly, just one point I want to emphasize. Now, you know, I'm not sure who's winning this war. In my personal opinion, it appears to be a stalemate. I'm not sure, maybe your guest, Mr. Ritter, has better information than I do. But regardless, you know, the West appears to sincerely believe that it can at least prolong the war and drag Russia into a quagmire, which is similar to that which happened in Afghanistan. Now, whether or not those beliefs reflect reality, are these plans going to succeed? That's a different topic. But that does appear to be the Western perception,
All right, Ali, let Scott reply to your comment. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, it's just military math. I mean, you know, without getting into too much detail here, it comes down to the amount of firepower you're able to apply to a specific area. Ukraine's ability to deliver firepower in mass quantities with effectiveness throughout the breadth of the battlefield has been significantly diminished, while Russia's has increased. At the end of the day, if you need, you know, 10,000 rounds of ammunition to kill 100 troops, Russia's putting 400,000 rounds of ammunition on target. Ukraine's putting 4,000. So it's a battle of attrition. Russia is winning, and they're going to win. And there's no way that this military math can be offset.
Okay, let's go to Sioux Falls. Lee, you've talked about American public opinion. Like I said, I pointed out that, you know, Fox News has kind of, you know, talked less about it. Of course, it's, you know, the abortion issue is front and center right now. But it is kind of convenient here because if you look at poll numbers, people are getting less and less interested in this, and they're more interested in inflation, how much it's going to cost them. I mean, we have another one of these cases where it's this is an elite issue. Ukraine is an elite issue, but it's not really an issue for the American people. Thoughts? Go ahead.
Well, also on the left, the Roe versus Wade issue has become front and center as the fight that the activist left or Democrats who get out on the street care about. They care about Roe versus Wade, issue 1, 2, and 3. That is the biggest issue, and all the politicians. And on the Republican side, as I say, it's not being registered. The media doesn't want to report it. But when I talk to Republicans in the grassroots, they're increasingly skeptical. Zelensky appearing on the Grammys did not go over well with a lot of people. They see this as an orchestrated media move, and they're very skeptical of it. And the Republican grassroots are important because, by and large, those are the parents of people who will be sent into battle.
That's a really good point. Yeah, it's a really good point. Scott, let me go back to you. I mean, we've already heard it on this program, you know, the Afghanization of the conflict here. I tend to think the Russians wouldn't fall for that whatsoever. I mean, they've been very, very selective in their use of firepower, irrespective of what Western media says, because Western media only reports what the Ukrainians want the media to report. Okay, it's very, very clear to me. There's a lot more going on right here. And one of the questions that have been raised, you know, how much does Russia want to control? I would turn it upside down and said, how much will Kiev actually be able to control of what was Ukraine on February 24th of this year? Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I think, one, it's we already see that Kiev's not going to be able to control much of what's left. But more importantly, I think that the nature of this conflict is about to change dramatically. You know, I said earlier that President Putin had spoken about a special military operation. This war is expanding beyond that, and it's beyond the scope and scale that a special military operation is capable of handling. We're talking about potential expansive conflict with Finland if it joins NATO, with Moldova if it attacks Transnistria, with Poland if they move into Western Ukraine. I think because Russia is a legal country, I think you might see Russia change the terms. We go from special military operation to general war, and that brings with it a mobilization. That also brings with it a dramatic rethinking of the outcome, Ukraine will cease to exist. So Kiev just committed suicide. Could have stopped this war, could have survived. I think that they're buying into allowing themselves to be used as a proxy by the West. It's pretty much guaranteed that they're finished as a nation state.
Yeah, I've pretty much made it my trademark here, and I've said this all the way back to 2014. The more the West, particularly NATO, helps Ukraine, the smaller the country it becomes. And with this massive assistance, I tend to agree with you. It's a failed state now. Ali, what about the global South? Because I've heard a lot of different opinions about their, they have refused to condemn Russia. Is there a certain point where that would change, in your opinion? Go ahead, in Sydney.
Yeah, first of all, regarding the point you mentioned about the weapons being funneled to Ukraine and how they could come back and harm the West and maybe cause havoc. This is a real clear and present danger for Western countries and for Europe in particular. We have neo-Nazis, white supremacists from different groups coming to Ukraine, joining ranks with the Azov Battalion. The aim of these groups, or the aim of these neo-Nazis in general, these right-wingers, is to create a fascist state in Ukraine. So if these people get their hands on advanced weaponry, which is being funneled, that could pose a real menace to the European national security, bearing in mind that Europe already suffers from a neo-Nazi problem. Germany, for example, we saw thousands of law enforcement officials launching an operation, a large-scale operation, to apprehend neo-Nazi figures. So that is a very important point regarding the danger posed by the weapons being funneled and the right-wing presence in Ukraine, how that could affect European national security. Regarding your point about the global South, India is an interesting case in point. Despite being an ally of the West, it's refused to join the sanctions campaign, continued with trade with Russia. Indonesia has refused to exclude Russia from the G20, and most importantly, it is Asia, which is the rising economic power, not Europe. So with Asia rising and Asia not joining the sanctions campaign against Russia, I think this gives Russia a lot of leverage to continue with this military operation without having to have any concerns regarding any escalatory economic measures.
Right.
Being taken by its foes in the West.
You know, let's go to Scott, go to Lee here. Lee, what we've heard from Ali is so very important about the nature of the regime in Kyiv, which there is scant coverage of it in Western media. There is no context whatsoever of what this conflict means. I'm sure my guests are aware of it, like the Minsk Accords, the illegal overthrow of the democratically elected government in 2014. All of these things are left completely out of the West, of Western discourse. Do very many people in America know that some of the most important military groups in Ukraine are neo-Nazis? Have you ever heard that in Western media? Go ahead, Lee.
Well, I haven't heard in Western media, but remember, we have a very polarized country in the United States. And increasingly, Republicans are realizing they're seeing Ukraine as a Democrat issue. And not entirely, but people like Mitch McConnell or whatever, who the Republican grassroots hates, they may be singing the establishment song, but the grassroots, the thing is, you're not going to see that in the media. But the people who are Trump supporters or are more independent-minded, I think they are getting the message that this is a Nazi regime and that they've been called Nazis. Don't forget it. If you wore a MAGA hat, you've been called a Nazi for the last 5 years. So you're starting to see the correlation behind the Democrats calling them Nazis, but not calling Nazis Nazis.
Well, it's very interesting. What we've learned here is that the context of this conflict is intentionally being dampened. And with this new misinformation ministry, it is only going to get worse. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. Many thanks to my guests in Sioux Falls and Dalmar and Sydney. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.